Hello everyone, my name's Alice and I'm an addict. I'm glad that some noise came out of my mouth then, because I wasn't sure whether it would or not. I actually feel like my chair's lower than everyone else's. I feel like I'm looking up at you all, and hopefully that's just psychological, and as I share I'll grow a bit and, you know, be able to kind of meet you somewhere in the middle. Yeah, it's really nice to be here. I'd like to first of all thank Ros for inviting me, and I'd like to thank Patrick for a blinding share. It was really good to hear him, and it certainly helped kind of focus me and remind me of why I come to NA meetings. I'm really glad to be here. Friday night's my home group, and I don't usually miss it for anything, but, you know, a chance to come and share somewhere else, it's a great opportunity. And, you know, situations like this, do I get nervous? Well, yeah, because that's only human, but I don't mind that, because I really feel I belong here. You know, I feel part of this fellowship, and every person that sits in this room tonight has, you know, we all have an equal kind of part to play. We all have an equal ownership of NA. You know, people all over the world, it's our fellowship. And if we're in this room, I believe we belong, you know. And I think one of the most difficult things to do is for a newcomer to walk into these rooms. You know, I think it's so important that we provide meetings where people feel welcome, where they get a cup of tea, where if possible they get a seat, where at least they get a friendly smile and what have you. And you know, and I really feel that from this meeting tonight. You know, there's a real atmosphere of recovery here. I'm not going to tell you how old I am, like Patrick. I'm going to be a bit more coy about that, but I'm sure you'll work it out. I turned 15 years clean last November, a day at a time. I got clean in, it's funny, I got clean on D-Day in 1991, and I always find that rather poignant, for me anyway. I came into these rooms just feeling absolutely broken. I had nothing left in me. You know, I'd had rock bottoms previously, but I'd had enough. I was ready to throw in the towel when I came into these rooms. I was young. I came into NA when I was 24. I hadn't been using for that long. I mean, I started using as a sort of in my early to mid-teens. And I didn't, you know, I didn't kind of have the amount of time out there that some people have. But I quickly came to a place of complete isolation, degradation. You know, I had no self-respect, I had no dignity, I had nothing. You know, like Patrick, I lived in one room full of ashtrays, beer cans, and I think the only difference was that I actually had an escaped parrot living in my room with me, and I can't even remember why, but I couldn't catch the fucking thing. It used to wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning going, what, what, what? And it's like, oh, Jesus, you know, as if life isn't bad enough. I started using drugs because I wanted to. I thought it was terribly romantic, you know. I grew up in the 80s, you know, I was a teenager in the early 80s, and all the bands around at the time, they really didn't do it for me. There was just all these blokes in leather box jackets with foofy hair and black eyeliner, and that kind of didn't really appeal to me. What really appealed to me was kind of older music, and through that, you know, I had a load of dead rock stars as heroes, and I kind of felt like I was born a bit after my time, and I just kind of really, I suppose, you know, like Patrick mentioned, you know, I'd had experiences. I didn't have a particularly bad childhood, you know. Yes, I come from a dysfunctional family, but who doesn't? You know, is there any such thing that, you know, we all kind of, all families have their problems. Mine were no different than, you know, anyone else, I don't suppose. And I'd grown up, I'd felt loved, I'd felt cared about, I'd been taught boundaries, I'd been taught, you know, a degree of right from wrong and things like that. But, you know, I grew up, I hit my teens and became very disillusioned with life. I felt awkward in my own skin. I felt like some freak. I felt like I just couldn't cope with the emotions that I felt. And I suppose I was drawn towards getting out of my head. I didn't want to listen to the screaming that was going on in there. I just wanted to get out of my head. And you know, and I understand that for what it is, you know, it is today. But I was sort of drawn to kind of, I was drawn to what seemed like a very romantic lifestyle, and I was drawn to use, and that's what I did. You know, I went out, and the first time I think the first time I used drugs, I went out and scored. You know, it wasn't like, you know, people were trying to kind of, you know, take advantage of this poor young girl. I was like, I wanted to use. And, you know, and for a while, I actually really, really enjoyed it. You know, I kind of had a lot of fun. And I, you know, and I did some crazy things, and I met some bizarre people, and I quite enjoyed myself. And I sort of, you know, by my sort of, you know, late teens, I'd got involved with people. I'd kind of finagled my way into these situations where, you know, I was either kind of going out with someone who was selling drugs, or I was selling drugs, or whatever. But I mean, there was a definite progression to my using. You know, I started off using, and it was kind of much the same as everyone else's. But quite quickly, I'd be running around at the end of the night calling everyone else Larry Lightweight. What's the matter with you? Use more, use more. What's the matter? What do you mean you want to stop? You know, it just wasn't in my ken. I just couldn't, you know, I had no off switch. Off meant I was unconscious, but up and, or vomiting or something. That was my off switch. And, you know, people started to kind of pull away from me because I was a fucking handful. You know, I really was a handful. I was just this, like, kind of loopy young girl who, out of her head, and, I mean, I caused a lot of trouble. And, you know, my using progressed, the people that hung around with changed, everything got a bit heavier, started to hang around with different types of people. And the whole kind of, you know, I'd gone from the sort of nice hippie trippy environment to the kind of, you know, there was organised crime around me, there was people doing things to other people that was really unpleasant. And, you know, there was just this progression in my using, you know, and kind of, and those people started to pull away from me as well, you know. And I guess by my early 20s, I was, you know, I'd started selling drugs, and that's how I supported my using. I sold drugs. But, you know, my life had become very small. Coming to NA and getting clean has allowed me freedom from active addiction. You know, it's given me choices in my life. It's given me the opportunity to try to fulfill my own potential. Using, I had no chance at doing anything because I was a prisoner. I really feel like I was a prisoner. I wasn't able to go anywhere. I wasn't able to leave the country, leave the town, leave my street in case I couldn't score anywhere else. You know, what if I can't score? What if I run out of drugs? What if? And the fear, you know, that perpetual fear just kept me caught up in that same environment. And you know, my life became Groundhog Day. It was the same day over and over again. You know, at the beginning, my using seemed kind of romantic, and, you know, all these older people that were quite charismatic in my life. The end of my using, it was awful. You know, it was awful. I had some pretty horrible experiences. I'd had some very, very close shaves, and I've been very, I just feel very, very fortunate to have, you know, got out with the amount of damage that I got out with. I mean, it could have been a lot, lot worse. But I thought I'd been really, really clever. I always thought you'd be okay if you didn't take drugs that were physically addictive. If you didn't take physically addictive drugs, you'd be all right. You wouldn't turn into an addict. That was, and that kept me in denial for a long time, you know, because I didn't do opiates, I thought I couldn't be an addict. You know, I kind of, you know, used myself senseless, but because I didn't do a particular type of drug, then I couldn't have a drug problem, could I? You know, there was all this kind of stuff going on. Anyway, so, you know, I got into my early 20s, and as I say, I'd had some really horrible experiences. You know, I feel really weird because this is being taped. So yeah, I'd had some pretty horrible experiences, and I'd kind of done stuff to people that, you know, has taken me quite a long time to come to terms with, I'd had rock bottoms before. You know, I'd had rock bottoms where I think when I was 18, I took a big overdose. I tried to kill myself. When I was, you know, in my sort of very early 20s, a lot of stuff went down and I had to do a massive geographical and get away from, you know, some very, very angry people. And I'd had these rock bottoms. And I got to the sort of, you know, I got to the summer of 1991 and nothing particularly big had happened, but I think, you know, I just looked around me and there was no one there anymore. There wasn't anybody. I didn't have any friends. I had the person I scored off, the bloke that I slept with, my mother, and that was about it in my life. And, you know, I just felt like I couldn't go on. I remember sitting in this bedsit with my squawking parrot and looking at my drugs and thinking, I really don't want to do this, and having to use, you know. And it was kind of like, oh God, you know, this I just can't do this anymore. And you know, I went and picked up the phone, and in true kind of, you know, in true me, I can hold it all together. I'm all right. I can handle it style. I phoned my father. He said, are you okay? Do you have a problem? I'm like, no, I'm fine, Dad. Everything's okay, you know. Anyway, I did phone him back and say, you know, look, you know, I need help. Because I'd gone throughout my childhood and I'd gone throughout, you know, my adulthood up until that point, and I'd never ever let it be known to anybody that I was vulnerable. I was, you know, I think it talks in the, I'm not very good at quoting stuff, so apologies if I get this totally wrong. It talks in the basic text, I think, about being terminally hip and fatally cool. And that was very important to me, what you thought of me, the way I handled myself. You know, I was so cool, I couldn't even get up and take a pee in case, you know, anyone kind of thought I needed a pee, do you know what I mean? It's like, And I was just never emotionally vulnerable with anybody. I mean, I had no emotional intimacy. I didn't have emotional intimacy with friends. I didn't know how to. And anyway, I, through a sequence of events, I picked up the phone. It started the ball rolling. I ended up moving down to Glastonbury. I get clean in Glastonbury. You know, who goes to Glastonbury to get clean? Me. So anyway, I go off to Glastonbury to get clean, and you know, and I kind of create this big furore around, you know, myself for the first few weeks. And you know, there's my poor father trying to help me. He's a local businessman, and you know, there's me, you know, lying in the street, pissed out my mind, screaming at passers-by, you know, all that kind of really attractive stuff. Anyway, you know, I was really fortunate. They practiced a little bit of tough love and said, you know, if you don't sort yourself out, you can fuck off. That was my stepmother's words to me. I was like, oh, that came across loud and clear. And I kind of felt like I'd really burnt all my bridges, and I really felt like, you know, I'd really had enough. I really couldn't cope anymore. And, you know, I made a phone call. I got to pick the Yellow Pages up, and under duress, I made a phone call, and NA wasn't in the Yellow Pages, so I went to AA. I phoned AA up, and I said, look, I think I've got a problem. My dad thinks I've got a problem. And I was 12-step by a 70-year-old farmer who took me off to a meeting in Shepton Mallet. And they were all really, really nice people. They were lovely, in fact. You know, they made me cups of tea, and they made me really welcome. And I kind of didn't really identify with very much. I mean, I think if I went into one of those meetings today, I'd probably feel a bit different. I'd probably be able to see a lot more identification. But for me, the lifestyle identification wasn't there. You know, it wasn't a woman sitting at home kind of hiding my bottle of sherry under the kitchen sink and doing all that sort of thing. It just really wasn't me. So, but anyway, they kind of realised it wasn't me. So they passed me on to some people who were in NA, and I started going to NA. And I went to my first NA meeting, and I think I stayed clean since that first NA meeting. I think the thing that really hit me about that first NA meeting was, you know, people were very warm. People wanted me to be there, and people hadn't wanted me to be anywhere for a very long time. And people wanted me to be there, but also there was this lifestyle identification. This guy that was doing the share, I mean, there was one thing, I thought he was pretty hot, so it's kind of quite, you know, he had my attention at that point. But he was talking about, you know, Colombian drug smuggling and gun running and all this kind of stuff, which, you know, I hadn't done. But the point was, there was kind of stuff that, you know, that crossed over. There was kind of stuff that I thought, well, you know, no, I haven't done what he's done. I've done some of the things some of the other people have done. And actually, these people have done a lot of things and they're okay to talk about it. And for the first time in my life, I experienced some level of emotional intimacy. You know, I went somewhere where people were actually being honest to a greater or lesser degree about what they'd done, where they'd come from and how they felt. And that was such a relief to me. That was such an incredible relief. It's like, oh, I don't have to do this on my own anymore. You know, there is somewhere for me. And what I realised is with this terminal hipness and being fatally cruel, and it was fear. You know, it was like, it was fear. I kind of couldn't let people see that I couldn't cope. And it was difficult. I think we all do. You know, breaking down those walls when we first come into these rooms is quite difficult. You know, looking someone in the eye and smiling, I can still have real problem doing that today. You know, I'd much rather on some days avert your gaze than look at you. You know, there's days where it just feels a little bit too painful. But it was, you know, it helped me to start sort of pulling down these walls and identifying just how much fear I had. You know, I was really scared and I kind of started to see that for what it was. And that fear was a fantastic motivator in my early recovery. You know, that fear kept me clean because that fear helped me make the decision that these people who have been clean for, God, 30 days, 6 months, 9 months, a year. You know, these people had something that I wanted and I better listen to them. So it was my choice to, you know, to follow these suggestions, to kind of try and stick with the winners, to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. And my sponsor told me to stop going to meetings and have a night in at one point. She's like, you've really got to try not to go to so many meetings. And I got a sponsor and I started to work the steps and, you know, oh God, they started doing things like trying to get me to take on commitments, and I was much too grandiose to take on a tea commitment. So I took on this literature post, which was just hideous because I had to speak in front of people and, you know, and all that kind of scary stuff. But yeah, it was, the fear really, really motivated me. And for those first few months, I kind of feel a bit awkward about saying this because I don't want to discourage people who are new around. For those first few months, I wanted to use a lot. You know, I really, really wanted to use. And I felt like there were days that all I could do was sit on my hands and breathe in and out because I couldn't cope with the feelings. I couldn't cope with the cravings. And then I actually identified that a lot of what it wasn't actually cravings, they were just feelings. But because I'd always used on them, I'd associated them as being the same thing. And, you know, I get clean in this tiny little town where there's one meeting a week. And I went to, you know, I had to go to another fellowship to do 90 and 90, and I had to travel to Bath, and I had to travel to Bristol. And I really did put a lot of footwork in because I was scared and I wanted to stay clean. And people were really good because it was a small fellowship, I think. There was a real sense of camaraderie. And, I had a couple of guys, and there was only one other woman that went to my meeting, but I had these couple of guys who used to sort of babysit me. And I think it was really hard for them because they were like in early, well, not really early recovery, but they were sort of like, you know, they got a few months or a couple of years clean, and they wanted to go out and meet girls, and they just got this newcomer tagging along with them everywhere they went, you know. I was there like a little, you know. Bless them. I'm sure they've got girlfriends by now, though. So the fear really kind of kept me going. And, I suppose that I just wanted to be, you know, I've always been quite motivated, quite competitive and quite a perfectionist. So I decided I wanted to be the best recovering addict, you know. I was going to work really hard at my recovery. And I did, you know, to be fair, I did put in a lot of footwork and I did work the steps to the best of my ability. You know, I worked hard, I did a step one, And that was, you know, that was helping me to see the problem. You know, the step one was identifying the problem for what it was. Step two, and I actually feel, you know, step one is a really quite scary, lonely place to be. It's quite a desolate place, step one. So, you know, I moved on very quickly, and step two, you know, the only thing that was really clear to me was the insanity of my using, you know. So I had no problem with sort of grasping the fact that I kind of needed to change. Although people used to say that to me. People used to say, you need to change. And I used to say, you know, I've come here to get clean, not to change my whole personality. And they used to laugh, you know. Can you blame them? Anyway, so, you know, step two and then step three. And to be honest, I was very willing, and I think I was quite open-minded, and I just felt very broken, so I just kind of went along with a lot of stuff, and you know, I acted as if, I think, with the whole higher power thing. I didn't understand it on any deep level at that point in time, and you know, and that this is just for me. I'm not saying that that's everyone's experience, but you know, for me, it was a case of acting as if, and you know, just having blind faith. You know, having blind faith that it was going to be all right if I kept putting one foot in front of the other, and to try to trust the people around me and what they're saying, and you know, and that led me on to doing my first step four, which was. It was rather like a confessional. It was all the terrible things I'd ever done wrong. And I remember finishing it, and I remember going home with this folder under my arm. And I was thinking, I was just, you know, sort of waiting to... I'd arranged to meet my sponsor and to read my step five out. And I went into the shop and bought a packet of fags. And I got out of the shop, and I was like halfway down the road. I thought, where's my step four? So I went back to the shop. And my step four is behind the counter on the shelf at the back, and I can see it. And I'm like, oh my God, there's my step four. And the really bizarre thing was, there was no one behind the counter, so I just tiptoed round, picked it up, and then vamooshed out of the shop as quickly as possible. I was like, oh my God. You know, and I read my step four out to my sponsor. I did my step five. I admitted to God, you know, myself, to another human being, the exact nature of my wrongs. You know, I was, you know, she helped me understand the real significance of that step, and it was just good to be able to say, you know, to talk about some of the things I did in front of someone else, and for them to say, me too, yeah, I did something like that, or to share something that was kind of, you know, on a similar thread. And it helped me look at my character defects. And, you know, so all that was kind of, you know, jogging along really, really nicely. Life felt quite easy. And then I meet a boy, you know, and that's where things all started to get a little bit complicated. You know, the advice tends to be not to get into relationships and early recovery. And I kind of understand why. You know, I really kind of understand why, because I wasn't emotionally mature enough for a relationship. You know, I had too much unresolved stuff going on. And I was like, I'd like to describe myself as a chameleon, but that needs to be somebody who needs to kind of understand enough about themselves to change. I was more of a blank piece of paper. I was like, I didn't know what music I liked when I got clean. I didn't know who I was. I had no sense of self, and therefore to get into a relationship was kind of quite a tricky thing. Anyway, so I meet this guy at an NA party, sidles up to me, and we have a little chat, and he asks me out on a date, and I'm terribly flattered, and blah, blah, blah. We go out on this date, and I'm really lucky because the guy sort of has had a lot of integrity, and you know, I was 6 months clean and he was 5 years clean, and you know, he got a lot of stick over it, you know, 13th step, all this kind of stuff going on, and it courted a lot of controversy in a very small fellowship. You know, it was the conversation of many coffee bar experiences for a lot of people for a while. Anyway, you know, I get into this relationship, and you know, and what it did for me was, instead of kind of having all these things fairly sort of stable and moving along quite comfortably, as I say, it really catapulted and sort of surfaced a lot of these issues that I probably wouldn't have had to have dealt with for quite some time, you know. Anyway, so there I am, and you know, and I experienced, you know, real, I experienced really kind of dark stuff. I really experienced jealousy like I'd never experienced jealousy before. You know, you're looking at her, aren't you? You know. It's really funny because I was so, are you looking at her? Is she prettier than me? Is my bum bit, you know, it's just this poor guy. It's like, oh my God, this poor bloke. He didn't really, you know, I suppose, you know, that was his lookout. You know, that's what he walked into. But it was very, 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 very difficult. And, you know, getting into a relationship without any kind of chemical is really difficult. I felt really awkward. It was very, I was used to having these really romantic relationships where you were both so out your head you didn't really know what was going on anyway. You know, you didn't know which bit you were kissing anymore. It didn't really matter. But, you know, here I am, and, you know, stone cold light of day in daylight looking at someone who said, can I kiss you? I'm like, I don't fucking know. Don't ask me. Just do it. It was just, God, talk about, and do you know what he did? He kissed me. We were sitting on a bench in his garden. He said, can I kiss you? And I said, yeah, go on. So we had this knocking of noses, clattering of teeth. Do we go this way or that way? And then he gets up and he puts his hands on his chest and skips this big circle around the garden. I thought, you fucker. It was awful. It was awful. Anyway, you know. I'm not going to tell you about the next bits. I'll leave that for you to think about. So anyway, I'm kind of getting a bit sidetracked here. But yeah, so I'm in a relationship. But I suppose one of the things that did come out of it was, you know, he had a lot more clean time than me, and I got to know some of his friends, and some of those people are still my friends today. And I kind of, and I sort of, what I could see from that was a bridge to normal living. I could see people with very ordinary functional lives, and I wanted some of that, you know, kind of through getting to know people in NA that were, you know, had a bit more time than me, and sort of finding role models, really. I started to kind of get my life together. You know, I lived in a squat at 16. I left home. I didn't get an education. I was in much too much of a rush to kind of get as completely obliterated as possible. So I left school when I was 15, you know, and I just went into this big mad drug craze. And by the time I was, you know, I was 16, I was living in a squat, feeding the same 50 pence through the meter. You know, I had no education, I had no life skills, yada, yada, yada. Anyway, so I get into NA and I start to kind of look at people and think, you know, that's kind of, I want to get some of those things. And, you know, the really fortunate thing about coming into recovery at 24 meant that I did that. You know, I learned to drive a car. I got an education. You know, I did my GCSEs, I did my A-levels. I went to university, then I went to university again. Then I got a job and I got a career, you know, and I learned to work. And all those sorts of things I learned here. In fact, I think one of the most key aspects to me helping me to work towards my, you know, my potential was doing service. You know, it was working out how to talk to people. It was working out how to identify issues and deal with them without shrieking my head off or never speaking to them again. You know, it was about going to service committee meetings and getting to know people and learning to make small talk. And, you know, I think NA's taught me a lot of life skills, you know, a lot of life skills. So yeah, I've got another 10 years to go, but... I'm a really, really practical person. You know, I can compare my insides with other people's outsides quite a lot, and I listen to people in meetings who are extremely profound, who kind of have this real, they sound like they have so much wisdom. And I'm a really simple person. You know, I'm really, the way I approach the program is ever so practical. You know, I have a way of, I've worked through the steps, with my sponsors over the years. You know, I've had a few different sponsors, and the woman I've got now, like Patrick said, she's not my friend, she's my sponsor, and she's a woman with a great deal of dignity, and she's very different to me. I mean, I've got a great deal of dignity too, but no, she's very different to me. She's very quiet, I'm much more outgoing. She sort of tempers me in a way, you know, we get between listening to her kind of makes me calm down a little bit and rethink things and take a step back. And what I'm doing now is I've decided to work through the steps again, and I'm actually approaching different people to work steps with, you know, people that I think have got a real particular strength around, you know, meditation. I'll probably talk to them about step 11, or people that really seem to have a real kind of ability to hand things over, I'll probably talk to them about step 3. So I just feel like it's something different to do this year, to really kind of reinforce my program to myself. And you know, I'm very privileged to have recently taken on a new sponsor who's working through from step 1 again, and you know, that's incredibly helpful for me. I kind of, you know, I carried on. I must say, this relationship that I got into in early recovery, you know, we're still together nearly 15 years later, so it doesn't mean that, you know, relationships can't work, you know, two addicts. But it's a long, hard, thank you. I'm not gonna talk about that anymore. Recovery has been it's been an amazing journey. It's, you know, recovery's not difficult, life's difficult. You know, I've had some real ups and downs. I've had some amazing experiences since I've been clean. And there's been many points over the years where I've sat there and thought, if it doesn't get any better than this, I don't care. This is good enough for me. You know, I'm a happy customer. But there's been points in my recovery as well when things have happened with life, you know, great tragedies. I lost a little baby, you know, really, 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 really difficult things that I've had to deal with, you know, and it's just the only way I've managed to cope with those situations is through the kind of experience and support that I've got one way or another through NA. You know, and I've had great joys as well. I mean, I now have a 20-month-old daughter, and, you know, she's just, it's really brought a whole new wonderful dimension to my life. So I do feel really grateful, and you know, I feel really lucky to be here, because there's a lot of people don't make it. There's a lot of people come in. I have friends that have relapsed after years and died. You know, I feel terribly sad about that. But like it says on our medallions, no addict seeking recovery need ever die. And as long as we're here to turn on the lights, put on the kettle, put out the chairs, and to welcome people, you know, I think that really holds true. And thank you very much for listening.
Thanks, Alison.